It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon in Anchorage. And the snow is still there, but it will be gone pretty soon. And then we'll be going into our summer activities, one of which is the market down in the what we used to call the Buttress area downtown on 3rd Avenue, where all those vendors come out. There's music, booths, and lots of people go down to spend Saturday afternoons and just enjoy sunshine if it's sunny, or they enjoy the rain. And that's going to be our topic today, these markets around Anchorage and what role they play in our economy. What they provide an opportunity for people, just regular people, to start a small business. All you need is a booth and something you can sell. And I've got Bill Webb here, who is the manager, owner of the market and several other vendor-type markets in Anchorage. Bill, thanks for being with us.
Oh, we're glad to be here. We always like to talk about our markets.
Yeah, and Terry Atwell is here. And Terry is a jewelry maker and has been a vendor at the market, you said, for 21 years?
21 years, since the beginning.
Wow, that's a long time.
And she was only 9 years old when she started. Yeah, right.
Three, as a toddler.
You've seen a lot of sunny and rainy days, and we put some of Terry's jewelry on the website, and it is really beautiful. So we're going to talk a little bit about her artwork and how she presents it to the community, that this opportunity that the markets provide. And we hope you will get involved. I'd be really interested in hearing from folks who may have been vendors at the market. What did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? What opportunities did it provide? And maybe you go to the market and shop, and maybe you have things you'd like to change, or maybe positive comments about what you like about it. And maybe downtown merchants have some thoughts. You know, that's been a topic. Do the markets help downtown or take away from it? So a lot of good stuff to talk about today. But first, I want to start out, Bill, like the market is it's not just a craft fair. There's a lot of stuff going on there.
There's a little bit of everything going on.
And how many vendors and how many performers and stuff will you have there on a typical?
When we're full in the peak of the summer, we fill all the booths, and we've got 264 booths that would be full with vendor and merchandise. We have the stage, mm-hmm. which we have continuous entertainment for 8 hours a day on. Then we have the buskers in the aisle. You just got a little bit of everything going on at all times. People and things show up we never even expected, and you kind of go with the flow.
And it's expanded. Originally, it just started out just on Saturday afternoons. When is it happening now?
Yeah, we do Saturday and Sunday from 10 till 6. Mm-hmm. And when you say expanded, when I
rain
took
rain or shine, right?
Rain or shine.
Or wind.
Yeah, right. When I first started 13 years ago, we had 12 and a half cubic yards of trash on Saturday. And now Saturday and Sunday, we have 80 cubic yards. So
wow.
There's been quite a growth.
That's a measure of success.
How you measure a market, is how much trash is generated.
And it's pretty open in terms of what people can sell, right? I mean, you don't like put a limit on it.
No, we have a family values policy, which basically, if you couldn't in good conscience, my conscience, sell it to an 8-year-old, you can't sell it at the market. Other than that, it's pretty open. We do restrict certain things like alcohol and mm-hmm. whatever to keep it family friendly.
So it's not, I mean, it's not all arts and crafts. It's like the whole gamut of what people might want to buy just on an impulse shopping trip.
That is correct. However, last time I counted, which was last fall, and 78% of our vendors sell made in Alaska items.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite high.
Uh-huh. So, and then in the morning, there's the farmer's market portion of it.
They stay there all day now. That used to be a morning affair, but they've come up with enough production over the years that most of them last till 6 p.m., and we do love it when those greens come in. People always are looking for them our opening weeks, and there really isn't any produce to speak of till the 1st of July.
Right, hadn't had a chance to grow yet, yeah.
But we sure get our share of it.
What's your first weekend?
May 11th, Mother's Day weekend.
That's coming right up.
Yes, right away here.
Now, hopefully the snow will be out of the parking lot.
Terry was telling me she saw a few flakes a little while ago. It made me nervous that we've got to get the restroom thawed out and running. So
it must be a little bit chilly down there at the beginning of the season.
It can be real chilly sometimes. However, May can also be our nicest month.
Uh-huh.
We've had some beautiful May months. And
Yeah. Well, Terry, tell me about your work. We, as I mentioned, we have pictures of some of your jewelry on alaskapublic.org, and this is something that began as just an artistic thing that you wanted to do.
Right. It started more probably as a kind of a craft outlet for me. And then I found that I really loved making jewelry. I do primarily seed bead work, but I also make glass. I do handmade glass beads and some metal work as well. And I pretty much got to a point where I was, you know, giving stuff to everybody I knew.
You and could only wear so much jewelry, right?
And still wanted to create, and I was donating things to charity functions and still had more things I wanted to create, and so it became a business. I first started with another woman, and we worked together, I believe, about 5 years, and then split that partnership, and I've continued. My work continues to kind of grow and evolve, and I just really like what I do. You know, I think the creative piece is really important. I really value handcrafted work in all mediums, and I think that's a piece that we had kind of moved away from in the United States, and we're starting to move back towards that, that people value that. And when you handcraft something, it's like you're offering kind of a piece of yourself. And so I really appreciate that piece, and that's been really nice to watch that grow at the market as well, because there was a period of time there where there was a bigger mix of probably things that were imported or things that you could find, and those things have value as well. Mm-hmm. But what I hear from shoppers is that they are really looking, especially the visitors, is they're really wanting something that's made here.
It's kind of going to a market like this is kind of about making a personal connection with somebody, mm-hmm. and you buy something from them because
right.
you see and meet that person mm-hmm. and you like something about them.
Right. And that's why I think one of the fun things about the market is it's kind of, for the vendors, it's kind of like, you know, being Toby Tyler that you ran away and joined the circus, you know, and mm-hmm. there's this whole kind of family and code and all those kinds of things. And then I think for the shoppers, it is about that personal connection and hearing their stories. They want to hear your story. You know, what was your inspiration? How did you make this? How long have you been doing this? They want to know, you know, is this truly an Alaskan piece? And then they want to tell about their life as well and how that's going to connect, especially for some of our older visitors. That this may be their trip of a lifetime, their one big dream trip. Mm-hmm. So they want to connect it to, you know, well, I'm going to take this to my daughter in Michigan, and she loves the color purple. Or I'm going to give this to my granddaughter so that she'll remember, you know, about Alaska and always remember this trip we took together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to be part of that, like someone's story and continuation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you must be a pretty outgoing person because you could just be a hobbyist sitting at home making jewelry and then selling it through a shop or something. Well, but for 21 years, you've wanted to meet your customers
right.
and listen, because there's a lot of listening involved.
Yeah,
right?
I'm actually a fairly shy person, but I do love hearing people's stories.
Uh-huh.
And I like that kind of delight of taking a little piece of them as well, you know. And for a long time, I actually kept like a little market notebook of like, you know, a funny saying or a funny story or something. And some of those really are very, very touching. And so those are my reward, as well as a financial gain and satisfaction for creating something beautiful that I love, but also that it's touched someone else. You know, that's the piece that I really like about the market, is that connection piece that you have with people. And you do have to be like a patient listener, because sometimes you have, you know, people who stop mm-hmm. who are not as interesting or not as kind or whatever. But, you know, you do have to listen. A friend who's a wildlife photographer at the market had a wonderful story one time where people were looking, and he was explaining how it may take a day to get this shot. And someone said to him, well, you must be so patient. And he said, well, yes, I stand here and listen to you all day long.
You know, so. Yeah, you bet I'm patient. Right,
yeah.
Right. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and I'm here with Bill Webb and Terry Atwell. We're talking about the markets here in Anchorage that will be getting started in another few weeks. And actually, Bill also runs markets during Christmas time and lots of different things, which we're going to talk about. And we're interested in your input. You know, did you ever think about these markets as being part of community and a part of the ability for folks to meet and talk to each other on a human level, which they might not otherwise have? Seems like we're kind of missing some of those spaces anymore, and it's really That's something I hadn't thought so much about, that the markets are just a place where somebody could go and meet a kindly person and have a conversation. So we'd love to hear your thoughts. The number here is 550-8433. Outside, that's within the bowl. Outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. Be interesting to hear from some other vendors, too, about what they like or dislike or just their thoughts about the market. Bill, I had a friend who came up from outside with some paintings and decided to pay for part of his trip to Alaska by having a booth for a couple of weekends. And it struck me what Terry was just talking about. The personality of the vendor is so important. I went down to look at his booth, and there's a woman looking at his paintings and buying a painting. And, you know, she had tears in her eyes, and she gave him a big hug and left. And I said, wow, is that an old friend of hers? Yours? He said, no, she just walked
just
up.
Met her,
you know?
Yeah.
He just met her, and he just, like, told him the story of his artwork, and she connected with it and bought this piece. Oh. And it obviously had been really, yeah. Do you see a certain personality type among the successful vendors?
Oh, very much. Very much so. And they form communities back, you know, all their neighbors. When I first took the market, I'd walk up a row, and somebody would say, next year I'd like to be on the front row. Well, now I walk up a row and I'll say, Bill, next year 12 of us want to move and go together. And it's literally formed their little groups and an overall atmosphere.
Because they're spending the whole summer together.
Yes. And it becomes very, very close friends and center part of everybody's lives down there, including mine. And I mean, my circle of friends includes mainly vendors and whatever. The customers are just great. We have less problems in this market than any market in the world. I can't imagine where you'd have a problem-free market like we do. That I use as the best example, I think, that we have a restroom that we built down there about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we have yet to have our first defacing of that restroom.
Wow.
And have you ever seen a public restroom serving a half a million people a year that's not, you know, got ugly sayings scratched into all the walls and
what have you.
And people just have fun at the market and respect it.
Yeah. And hugely, you say a half million people a year, huge numbers of people. And it can be quite crowded on many, many weekends.
Oh, we get 20 to 30,000 on a summer weekend. And, you know, July and August in those periods, it really makes you wonder sometime where they all came from.
Yeah. Well, I suppose a lot of them are visitors coming down from the big hotels.
They are. However, the majority of our people are locals. About 70% of the people that enter the market are from the Anchorage Bowl area.
So you've done some interviews into stats just to figure out.
We did several surveys for years. And then the city also, when they had the controversy with the store owners, paid for a couple of surveys from outside worldwide groups that came in, and all of them established the same numbers. I mean, it's not difficult to do.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that for a minute. So the controversy, as I recall, was downtown businesses saying, you know, look, we have to pay rent, we have to shovel our sidewalk, we have to be here year-round. Why should we compete with somebody who's selling basically the same thing and all they have to do is rent a booth? And they wanted the market to be curtailed or done away with. But in the end, I guess that, you felt that, no, you were adding to the pie rather than taking away from it.
I don't think there's a doubt that it was easily proved by the groups the city hired that most cities would pay millions of dollars to get a market like this and put it in their downtown business area. And in fact, we've been approached by people wanting us to do that. And
Really, to start markets in other communities?
Yes, and, you know, outside, but I have no intention of doing anything outside other than vacation occasionally.
Yeah.
You know, the owners' arguments just didn't hold water.
Yeah.
In the first place, if you're a business person, we're bringing you a half a million people, and that's not just a half a million in total. That's a half a million that the survey show specifically came downtown for the market and would not have been there if it wasn't for the market. There's another 100,000 or so tourists that come through.
Mm-hmm.
So without that half a million, which the last survey I read, I think it attributed 18 million plus sales for downtown merchants, while they only attributed about 12 million for market vendors. So they actually get more benefit out of it than the vendors do financially.
Interesting. So the 12 million, you think on an annual basis for how much the vendors are selling?
Yes.
Well, Well, that sounds like a lot, but on the other hand, it's a lot of people splitting that money up.
Yeah, it is. There's other things.
Nobody's getting rich, in other words.
No, nobody's. No, they're not. It's you don't get into this to make fortunes.
Yeah.
But we do have other things to market. I mean, it's hard for me to go to a shopping area in town without some store owner waving. And turn out it's a vendor from the market that started their stores. And we've probably been the biggest source of new stores of anything.
So in other words, somebody who's really successful there can move on to be a more of a year-round business.
Yes, and we've got a lot of our...
Some examples of that? I'd just be curious.
Oh, there's several around town that I'm trying to think, Mermaid Designs and caught me off, jewelry downtown. I can't remember her name, Killer Designs. And several of the photos, Todd Slott's got a shop now. Starfish Designs, Marcy.
Oh, yeah, and she's huge.
Yeah, she's got her third, I guess, store now, but I just... So
she started the market, huh?
Yes.
That's a great story.
Yeah, and Octopus Designs, and just on and on. There's a list of them everywhere. The other thing is we create about 300 full-time equivalent jobs.
Wow.
And when you compare that to a government-funded program, which is about $50,000 per job, I want my money.
And, well, it doesn't take much to get into it, right? I mean, you just, how much does a booth cost?
A booth is anywhere from 70 to 95 a day, depending how many days you contract for.
Okay.
And
that gets you basically a table.
That actually gets you just a spot.
Okay, so you need to set up your own table.
Right. You need to bring your own tent and your table and your chairs and your racks or whatever you got.
Weights?
Weights are really crucial.
Yeah, yes. I preach weights.
What do you need weights for, Terry?
Because of the wind. The wind is the biggest villain at the market.
Right, you're kind of exposed there.
You're on that buttress, and so, you know, it when it flies through there, it's been, what, sometimes 60 miles an hour.
Wow.
We get some heavy gusts, and it can surprise you that the worst one
So the weights are to kind of keep your vertical stuff from taking off?
Keep your tent
Keep your tent in place, okay. So. You're going to say, Bill, I interrupted you there, about the wind?
The worst we ever had was on a 70-some-odd degree day that was just calm and beautiful and all of a sudden, these dust devil type things come through, and it turned over about six booths and hurt a woman, and one of our vendors destroyed her product, and it can really be bad. That we do preach to everybody coming in to make sure they've adequately weighted their tent.
Well, I never thought of that.
No.
Hometown Alaska, we're talking about the downtown markets, and we're going to talk about some of the other markets that Bill operates. Bill Webb is with me. He's the manager of the markets that we have every weekend in downtown Anchorage, and Terry Atwell, who's a jewelry maker and vendor, and also has a day job, but that's not our topic today. And if you want to get on with this, the number is 550-8433. It's toll free 888-353-5752. Email's hometown@alaskapublic.org. And interested in hearing from folks who are vendors. Who are interested in being vendors. We've got the experts here who could tell you how to be successful. This is a question from a listener. Mr. Webb, is it correct that in the beginning you invested some of your own money into the market, which has gone on to foster Spinard Farmers Market and others?
I won't take credit for Spinard Market. They talked to me about it, and I gave them some advice, but frankly, there weren't any farmers to go over there. We're running out of farmers with all the new markets. We did start Center Market, as it's called now.
And where's that one?
That one's now in the Sears Mall.
Okay.
It started off at the University Mall. And two of the farmers wanted to take that on their own. And frankly, we're busy enough on Saturday. That was fine with me. So we let the guys have it. Northway Mall Wednesday Market is ours, and that's been going for, again, 12 years now. And it's a highly successful farmers market. We're in about our ninth season, of the Bear Paw Festival out in Eagle River, which is one huge fun event in a long weekend in July.
And you manage all the vendors? And
we do the vendor court. And fact is, if any vendors are looking in, we'd sold out, but due to some things with Hickel out there, we're able to get more land. So I'm adding 20 booths today. So if anybody got turned down, they can call us back. We've got booths again.
Okay, great.
Then we do three Christmas shows.
Which are sort of at the Egan or at the Denina Center?
They're all three at the Denina Center. Mm-hmm. And we start with a holiday food and gift show that's been around 27 years, I believe, now. And that's in early November. Then mid-November, towards Thanksgiving week, we have the famous Arts and Crafts Emporium, which if you haven't been there, everybody should go to the Arts and Crafts Emporium.
Okay.
That show is the most beautiful show in the world and would hold its own anywhere. Uh-huh. Big attendance. We fill every booth. And it's all required to be handcrafted in Alaska.
Oh, neat.
So it's really
beautiful. And that's another Christmas time?
That's correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the weekend before Thanksgiving.
I got you.
And then the day before or the Saturday before Christmas, we have Christmas Village, which is just a one-day show for all of us who forgot to buy it the other times.
Yeah.
And it's about our fifth year with that, and it's been very, very successful.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff going on. Terry, have you worked at any of these other things or just do the Saturday market?
I do the Craft Emporium every year, and that is a lovely show to be a vendor at and also to be a shopper at. That is one thing that often the vendors are each other's best customers because
right.
We've scoped out what we want and then either do a trade or buy outright. And it just has a really nice kind of classy feel to that show. And people, that's kind of a tradition for many people. They do it with their family or with their girlfriends, and they go out and have breakfast and shop or lunch and shop. And just really nice handcrafted things there. And it was that was another little bit of a controversy when it moved from the Egan Center to the Denina because people had, strong feelings. But I think it was a good move just because of, better light, better access in and out, those kind of pieces. And lots of parking options around it.
Yeah. So I'm curious about when you're making this jewelry, and obviously it takes a long time to make a beautiful piece of jewelry. And then you're at the market downtown many weekends or all summer long, and then also Christmas time. How do you make enough jewelry?
Thank goodness I'm fast, which I never knew I was fast until I took a beading class. And people were like, whoa. So I'm fast, which helps me be more prolific. I'm also a bit of an insomniac, so I can be late at night, up to midnight or one is not a problem, I also, I do lots of different kinds of lines. So my preference is definitely the more intense, more complex things, but I also do simpler things. I like to have a broad range on my table. So I have a range from, $12 to $300. So people can kind of look and see what meets their budget, what meets their heart's desire. So I'll have earrings that are like $15 to $20 that are, much faster to make than a more complex seed bead piece. So there, I like to have a range there. But I work all year long. That is something that vendors hear a lot at the market when they look at a handcrafted thing is you hear the comment over and over of, oh, it's because of your long winters. You must work all winter. And it's like, well, no, really, if you're a vendor, an artisan, you work all year long and not just the winter months.
Well, I would think you would see the date of the Christmas fair coming up or the date of, maybe you've gotten into August at the downtown market and you think, oh, I can't stand to make any more jewelry. Does that ever happen that you just...
It doesn't happen so much that way. I usually try to take December through February where I'm not creating for sale, that I'm creating either just for myself for expression or I'm organizing and doing my books and those kinds of things. So I do try to take, like a little bit of break where I get to explore a new technique, that I'm not trying to work on producing inventory, but that I'm working on something more creative. I do also do art pieces that, I've submitted and have been in the museum and the Earth, Fire, and Fiber. And so many of the vendors, they have that piece of their life too, where they do the pieces that are your bread and butter and you explore techniques that way. But you also may do something much grander that the market isn't the venue for selling that or even showing that. Sometimes that combination is a good thing.
Because most people going to the market are not thinking in terms of spending hundreds of dollars on something.
Right. But those do happen. You know, I always have kind of a focal piece, you know, that kind of draws people in, you know, and those are generally, you know, $250, $275. Mm. And I will sell five or six of those during the summer, usually.
Uh-huh.
So it just depends on, again, the clientele, you know, how much money they have to spend, how big of a souvenir they want, how much they want to treat themselves that day,
uh-huh.
you know, so... you know, I sell more of those lower end items that are in that, you know, $20 to $50 range, but mm-hmm. I always sell some of those bigger ones as well.
And you mentioned you actually make some of the beads yourself?
Yes, I do. It's called lamp working, which is the process of melting glass and making beads. And so I have one section of my table that is all handmade beads, and they're made into pendants or bracelets, sometimes brooches. And those are great outdoors because in the light, they are like really magical, you
mm-hmm.
know, and my business name is Bead Witched because you're creating magic with something small, you know, making something from nothing essentially, which especially with glass, you're.
So how do you go, I mean, what's the process to make a bead?
You have a torch. I use a propane oxygen torch and
uh-huh.
then you have rods of glass. I use Italian F-A-Tier glass. And then you're melting the glass in the flame, and you shape it around a metal rod.
Oh.
And you can shape it with graphite tools. You can add different things to it. It's all done in the flame, all sculpted in the flame. When you're all done with it, you put it in a kiln so it cools down very slowly over like 8 hours because you're working at about 1400 in the flame.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to let it not thermal shock.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's all cool, you take it off the mandrel, the metal rod, and you clean it out, and then you make your creation from it.
Huh. Wow.
So
and you can adjust sort of how the bead looks, the colors.
Yeah, there's glass comes in different colors. Some of it is as it looks. Some of it has what's called striking properties. So depending on where you put it in the flame, it may be a different color.
Oh, wow.
You can combine colors, kind of create your own colors.
So much more to this than I ever imagined.
Yeah, it's a very ancient art, you know, and
And I can tell that you've done your wrap a number of times because all summer long, as people come up and say, "Wow, how did you do this?"
Asked you. And sometimes people will be like, "You can't make a glass bead," you know, and it's like,
"Wow,
I must have been hallucinating all this time."
Where
you
do you think they come from, right?
So I do. I bring like rods of glass and metal rods that show kind of the steps of a bead, so I can pull it out and show, because it is part. That's part of my job. My responsibility mm-hmm. is to educate people about. The process, the same thing about the gemstones I use. I want to know about them. I want to know where they're from. I want to make sure that they're not collected in a way that's harmful to the environment
mm-hmm.
or you know, child labor, those kinds of things. You know, so those things are important to me. You know, so I want to make sure that the materials that I use are appropriate and safe. You know, there are certain metals that have lead in them, I don't want to use those, even mm-hmm. though they're less expensive. I don't want to use those because those are harmful to my clients over time.
Right.
So there's
a certain amount of inspiration and there's a certain amount of business when you're creating something
mm-hmm.
new, thinking that it needs to be something you believe in, but also mm-hmm. something you think that somebody will catch somebody's eye and they'll
right.
buy it on impulse.
Right. I tend to... that is probably one of my weaker areas, is that I make what I like. So I
well, or you could say that was your stronger areas.
Yes, I don't do mass production.
Uh-huh.
Most of my pieces are one of a kind, and I do read the trends. You know, mm-hmm. one of the things when I first started doing. You know, selling more seriously as another vendor, you know, said, you know, you have to get the craft report, you have to read it,
mm-hmm.
you know, write this down.
Is this
you
like
know
a
what
magazine
I mean? Yeah, it's a journal that has many, many pieces of information about, you know, ethical sales and how to set up a booth and lighting
oh, wow.
and photography. And it doesn't always apply to me, but I always mm-hmm. find something. And she was like, you know, write this down. If you are
huh.
serious about selling, write this down. And
apparently you know what you're doing at this point.
So that was good. So that's the same way with, you know, newer vendors that come up. I mean, when Bill was talking about being like kind of a family or a community, there was a newer vendor next to me a couple years ago, and they set up their booth like different every week, you know, and finally it was kind of like, okay. So I went over and I gave them some ideas and I said, you know, this is a resource for this and this is a resource for this. And you could buy this here and you could get six for the price of what you paid for three. And so I think, you know, we do try to help each other out. You're going to keep some secrets for yourself because you need to. But as far as if there are things that you can share, I think that's important because people did that for me when I was coming up
neat.
Too.
We're going to take a little break here and be back in just a minute. And I'll give out the phone numbers and email address again for listeners to get on the air and talk about the markets and what it's like being a vendor. I wonder if anybody out there sort of thought about turning their hobby into being a vendor. We certainly have the experts here to answer questions. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment for more of Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
We're back for more of Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking today about vendors, craft shows, the markets that take place in downtown Anchorage all summer, and farmers markets, Bear Paw Festival, the Christmas markets. There's a lot going on with people who make their own thing and sell it and make part of their living that way, and kind of learning about this part of our economy and the human personal connection that takes place between a crafter who makes something unique and then sells it and creates a connection with someone who wants to buy it. It's a kind of a community that is out there and that is maybe overlooked unless you're involved in it, but there's quite a lot to it. So if you're interested in the topic and want to get involved in the conversation, the number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433 outside Anchorage. It's 888-353-5752, and the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. Bill, you're running all these different markets and bringing in all these vendors, and you're very open to whatever they want to sell, but you also have a program focused on assuring products that claim to be made in Alaska are actually made in Alaska, and it's... You qualify folks to get into the state program to put a certain label on their products.
That is correct.
Yeah, how does that work?
Well, we are the contractor to operate the Made in Alaska program, which is a state of Alaska program and funded fully by the state. And we accept the initial applications and make sure either through some type of on-site observation or going to their place of manufacture and watching the process or whatever is necessary to assure ourselves that this product is actually made in Alaska. It has to be used products of local origin when possible. There's a lot of things we don't have, but when it is available, we make sure they use it. And 51% of the value added at the minimum has to be made in Alaska and performed here in Alaska. So following those criteria, we qualify or disqualify a product that makes application for a permit. Mm-hmm. In turn, we reissue those permits every year. Excuse me. And we're responsible for the paper shovel and collecting the money and deposit it. We're also responsible to make sure of the integrity of the program. We do periodic inspections of retail outlets, including markets and shows and what have you,
and to make sure that the products that have the which is
the label,
which is the
mother bear and cub,
the little polar bear, yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. To make sure that those are really permitted objects.
That is correct. That's the way that you know it's permitted. Mm-hmm. So we follow up on that. In addition to it, we do the marketing for the program. We run some newspaper ads. We have rack cards out. we're working with the state now that hopefully we could increase our budget in that area in future years. We also bring information to our permit holders through workshops, webinars, and newsletters that we put out. And we have a Manufacturer of the Year Award.
So folks who want to get find out about the program and maybe get the polar bear label, how do they contact you?
They just need to give us a call or go to the website. Our phone is 272-5634 or the madeinalaska.org website.
Madeinalaska.org. And so we'll make sure to put that on our website as well. But I'm sure you could probably find it through your site that we already have up here. Yeah. So I'm curious as to how many manufacturers are using this program, and if they are mostly small operators like Terry making her jewelry or larger?
It's a little bit of all. We've got about 1,100 companies or individuals who hold permits, and there's about 1,200 permits. Some of them have more than one. They range from the individual, such as Terry, all the way up to Alaska Sand and Gravel and Arctic Wild Rope and Supply and Insifoam and some other large manufacturing companies that do several millions of dollars a year. The state did a survey last year, and our permit holders, according to the survey data, did, I believe it's right at $153 million in sales of Made in Alaska product, which was pretty amazing.
That's more than you would really guess.
Yes, it is.
We don't think of our state as being manufacturing.
That's correct.
Well, a couple of those like industrial companies, obviously they're doing work on the materials, but they're not creating the materials here. I mean, like if you think about wire rope.
No, correct. They have to bring in the fibers and the steel and what have you.
And then they do the manufacturing from those materials. Oh, I
correct.
See. Okay.
And we even have a chain length fence manufacturer now that, again, they just bring up wire and he's got the machinery and what have you. But when I worked out the numbers, the wire itself is like 10% of the value.
Huh. I never knew that.
90% of it is the labor and the handling of it and the design and what have you that's done here.
So if you want to support local businesses, local economy, you can find products for even something like a chain link fence that are going to keep help locals be employed.
Absolutely. Home Depot is great about putting our Made in Alaska products in their flyers and all that. And they sell quite a few Made in Alaska products. And again, we're going to be working with them here pretty quick on a new marketing campaign.
Okay, neat. Now, but the very small folks who are like vendors making their own thing, they might not even bother because they're the only ones selling it.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Correct. Right. But people do, you know, let us know that the minute they started using the label, that their sales went up. And my wife and I are at the age now, we've started traveling. We never were able to do that before. And we just got back from a trip to the west coast of South America and stopped in six countries. And nobody, we go to all these local markets, and I was shocked that I was expecting all this beautiful handcrafted product, and it was just non-existent. It was just 100% made in China junk. And each vendor would have the same item. And we often get people come to the market and tell us how great our market is. Best one we've ever been to. And I see now what they're talking about. That.
Well, why do you think that came about? Because Terry was mentioning that earlier in the life of the market, maybe there was more mass-produced stuff, and now it's gone back to more
stuff. I get accused regularly by some vendors of favoring Made in Alaska. And that's probably an understatement. Then, you know, I confess to it. And but also, it's Made in Alaska sells. That, you know, if somebody wants to talk to me about increasing their sales, get a Made in Alaska product in there. And it's a fact. When we get off that tour boat and we go shopping, which we do, we love markets. We always go to the markets. And I'm not looking for something made in China. I want something made in, you know, Chile or Nicaragua or wherever we happen to be at.
Right. That's why you went there.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for. And tourists are very disappointed in most sports, but they love our market. They find lots of fur. They find lots of jewelry, lots of things that, you know, in itself says Alaska.
Yeah.
And that's really nice as a vendor when someone asks you to be able to turn and show them that the sticker that you have it and explain that. And lots of times they're being educated now, like if they're on a tour, to look for that or the silver hand.
Yeah.
So it's really nice, you know, because sometimes they look at you with kind of like a skeptical eye and you can flip it over and show them the Made in Alaska logo, and then they're like, oh, okay.
And the silver hand being the Alaska Native indication. Yeah.
Right.
Let's go to Christy, who is calling from Hope. Christy, did you have a comment or a question?
Yeah, I was just going to make a comment about I live out in a small village, less than 400 people year-round, and I am actually, I've spent the last 4 days sewing until my fingers have almost bled because we have summer coming up.
Yeah.
Bless you.
So, but I wanted, you know, talking about crafting, I've always been a crafter. I've traveled across the United States crocheting hats and making it from city to city. And the one thing that has changed crafting and fairs in and of themselves and have helped a number of people get through the recession is the handmade recession that's coming up. You have internet sites, you know, which makes it amazing for me to be able to get my Alaskan products out there, which gives Alaska exposure. You can't imagine how many people from Etsy send emails saying, wow, you're in Alaska, from different countries. And I've always done the craft shows, and it's the resurgence in homemade goods and everything. The craft shows have allowed people to make it through a really tough financial time.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Just tell me what you make, Christy.
I was listening to Terry, and I make just whatever I want.
All right.
I do. I throughout my life, I've done a number of things, but currently I'm a seamstress, and I do upcycled, recycled, reclaimed fabric products. I make skirts and bags and just about anything I possibly can. I just turned a pair of pants into this extremely cute little skirt.
Neat.
So, you know, there's... You use what you got. That's one of the things about the people here in Hope is that they just, you use what you have. You have to be resourceful. And I think Alaska, that's one of the key things to making Alaska different than most other states, is you use what you have.
Well, this is something that I was talking about with a friend, is that if you're going to make crafts and sell them and make money, you can't necessarily go to the fabric store and buy your fabric or go to the craft store, because they're going to make most of the money. That you have to find a way to get your materials that is inexpensive so that you can add the value to it.
Correct. Yep. I make do with what I have always. Generally, I'll run into a fabric shop or something, and there'll be a killer clearance sale, and I'll be like, oh, 10 yards, which will last me 2 years, and I'll make a line of skirts or bags or something. And but generally speaking, I try to find reclaimed fabrics. I make my own wool yarn, which is something I've recently learned how to do and use on my appliques and for different other texturing things.
That's neat. You know, I was recently in New York City and met this person who's a fashion designer and is now, you know, really, really well off. And she started out taking rejected fabric from the factory that had been stained or could not be used and making unique items out of it. And so it's really a trendy thing now. It's not just something for craft fairs. It's something that's taken over. So great, Christy. Yeah. Thanks for calling. And will you be selling at the market this summer?
I probably will not. I am looking at opening up a small shop here in Hope.
Oh, great.
Great.
Well, that is such a neat community to visit. I love it.
Oh,
down there.
An extra.
Great.
Best of luck to you. I might add, you mentioned Esty, that that's been a great site for many people. And in addition to that, the digital camera, I think, has been the biggest boost we've
And what is Esty?
Esty is a site for handcrafted products.
Oh, and where do I find it? What is it?
Esty.com. ETSY.
ETSY.com. Okay, we'll try to get that on our site.
Very unique site.
Well, thanks, Christy. We're going to go to another phone call. And next up is Marilyn from Anchorage. Marilyn?
Oh, hi. I'm Marilyn, and I'm one of the volunteer organizers for the Spinard Farmers Market.
Oh, great.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, I just wanted to check in. And first off, I just wanted to correct one thing that Mr. Webb said earlier, that that when we first were getting started, that there weren't enough farmers to go around. And we have a really good group of local farmers, a nice variety of things that we get from up in the valley, and actually even folks that have small gardens here down in Anchorage. And when we get started, we're at the May 18th will be our first day. And when we get started, you know, we got a lot of plant starts and that sort of things, you know, both vegetables and, you know, flowers, things for your yard. But then, you know, as the crops start coming in, we have a really, really nice variety of farmers. So just wanted to correct that.
Okay. So the starts are, people are growing these things inside their greenhouses and inside their houses right now, and then bringing them out for people to plant in their own gardens. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Right.
Are most
and
of
it's
the...
not only, I mean, it's, you know, it's ornamental flowers and that sort of thing, but it's also vegetables, you know, tomatoes that people can take home and plant in their own yards.
And where is the Spinard, where and when is the Spinard Market?
We're in the Chilkoots parking lot, under the windmill in beautiful downtown Spinard.
All right. And what
did... this will be our fourth year now, so we're, the volunteer group has been getting together regularly and making plans for the year, so I think we've got a lot of exciting things that are going to be happening this year.
What day of the week and time?
It's Saturdays from 9 to 2.
And is it true, as I've often heard, that the people who are serious will get to the farmer's market before it starts and be ready to grab what they can get right at the beginning?
Yeah, that is true. We get started at 9 o'clock, and you know, we always do have a few people coming in as the farmers are getting set up and you know, want to get there early to get their fresh produce and that sort of thing. So
yeah.
But we also just, I want to mention too that, you know, while we are a farmers market and we really give priority to farmers, but we also have a number of local artisans, and we have a great variety of food. People come and, you know, that regularly on Saturdays and have their lunch with us, and you know, we've got music and other entertainment as well.
Neat. So what about just gardeners? I mean, do is it really farmers or also?
I would say it's a little bit of both. We have some pretty big farmers. I mean, Dinkles and Glacier Valley, they're part of it. But we also have some people who, like I said, are literally doing some things in their own yard. You know, we've got a lady that sells raspberries, you know, that she's growing in her yard and that sort of thing. And so we have a real variety in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thanks for calling, Marilyn.
Yeah, thank you.
I wanted to ask you, Bill, about this aspect of your market. Is it mostly the big farmers, or do you also get a gardener who has some extra?
Well, when there's different size farmers, when you say big, and,
and none of them in Alaska are that big. But anyway,
well, there's a few of them that, you know, have several hundred acres under plan and are very commercial, and we exclude those from our Wednesday market. That we have to have a family farm. There has to be a family aspect to it.
Oh.
And we have about 7 farmers, and, you know, they're all family farms, but they are on the larger size, such as Mark Dinkle and Mark Rimple and Vern Stockwell, which do multiple markets. When they called me, they were not doing multiple markets, but now all of them have branched out, and they've got, frankly, their kids are getting old enough to run a booth so they can do multiple markets.
So do they pay you a fee for having that space, or
correct.
How does that work?
Well, okay. They just pay a booth fee each day. And
But somebody else who comes in and wants to sell their extra potatoes, can they do that too?
Or? We again have limited our market that they have to take a booth for the season.
Oh, okay.
So that at the peak of the season, they don't come in and dock the farmers who have committed to the whole season out.
I see.
We had a problem with some people, not a problem, but some people in Delta would grow this huge amount of tomatoes and without any warning show up with literally a truckload of tomatoes at half of what our Mat Valley farmers needed to get. And we just excluded that.
I see. And all these proliferation of different markets, has that in any way negatively impacted the amount of people at your market, or do you just have more business than you can handle?
No. We welcome any new market of any type, and I'm on the Alaska Farmers Market Board, and there's now, I believe, 27 markets in Alaska, and used to be Downtown Market was it. were the only one. And
it's a huge trend.
It's something that needed to grow. Mm-hmm. As far as any event goes, we love to see people out and about because sooner or later they're going to stop down at the market.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know of any event that really draws against us.
Yeah.
It all helps each other.
Terry, we were talking about something earlier. We were talking on Hometown Alaska today about the markets in Anchorage. Mostly we've been talking about the summertime market that happens weekends down in the Buttress area on 3rd Avenue. But we've also been talking about the Christmas markets that our guest Bill Webb runs, and the one in Eagle River, and there's lots of stuff going on in farmers markets. And Terry Atwell is with me as well. She is a jewelry maker and vendor. And Terry, we were talking a little bit about this aspect for you as an artist of making a human connection with the person mm-hmm. to whom you're selling your art, which seems kind of special that you mm-hmm. know where your work is going mm-hmm. to. When as a politician going door to door or other situations where you mm-hmm. have to meet a lot of people in one mm-hmm. day, sometimes it's hard to stay real and not just get mm-hmm. fatigued with too many human encounters. I mm-hmm. mean, how does that work for you? Do you find that after a while everyone looks the same, or are you able to keep connecting?
No, I think mostly I think because there's such a variety at the market, that's one of the, you know, a really fun thing is I can have, you know, a grandma, you know, at my booth next to someone with multiple piercings and tattoos, you mm-hmm. know, both looking. And I love that, you know, I uh-huh. try to take a little mental snapshot of it, you know, from my memory bank. And I think, you know, there are always some people who come through who are maybe having a bad day, they're a little crabbier, and you just have to recognize that's about them, not about you, mm-hmm. you know, and let them move on, you know, as time goes by. But no, I think, we do laugh sometimes about vendors about, you know, like you said, well, you know, you've said this before, obviously, you know, and that, you know, sometimes that by the end of the season, we joke that, well, let's just switch places for half an hour and see if, you know, because I hear you talking about photography and you hear me talking about how to make a bead and let's see if we've got all the points, you know, mm-hmm. and of course we've never done that, but it would be really entertaining to do it. And in some ways we do that because we'll cover for each other if someone goes to get something to uh-huh. eat or to the bathroom. And so I can explain, oh, he took this picture at, you know, blah, blah, blah. And,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So,
you're not
so
competing. You're
right,
cooperating.
Yeah, so that's kind of fun. I guess I don't think about that it doesn't feel real. And I think mm-hmm. because it's so varied, you know, that the people come from all over the world.
You have to really like people, I would think.
Yeah, I like people's stories. So I think that's for me, that's why, you know, I do some wholesale accounts and I like that, you mm-hmm. know, and but especially if I've made something really special, I want to know that it's going to a good home, you know, and I often remember that, you know, I've said to people, someone will walk up and I'll say, did your sister like that green necklace? And they're like, well, how do you remember that? You know, that was 3 years ago. And it's like, well, I remember because it was her 50th birthday and you wanted to buy her something really special.
That's really sweet. So, and I could see that because it seems like being an artist, seeing the work that you love and that it's part mm-hmm. of yourself go away mm-hmm. into the world and
right.
not know its fate
right.
would be sad, but you don't have that problem.
Right.
You know who's buying it.
Yeah.
Do you ever want to say, no, you can't buy it?
I have, actually.
Really?
There's a few times. One time I put something under the table and my sister was helping me and she's like, isn't the point to make money? And I'm like, they don't deserve that piece, you know. I'm going to keep it for now, you know.
Oh, that's
so
great.
But not very often. But yes, there's some times where it's like, well, you know, that is not the right piece for that person.
No, so that's what makes it special. So here's an email from John Swider.
Oh, yeah.
We're an example of a business that got its start and still participates in the Anchorage market. We have a photography gallery downtown at 416 G Street called John Swider's Alaska Gallery that sells photography and two books. So there's another example of how this is spread out and contributed to the economy. Somebody gets a good idea and makes it work at the market and then turns it into a business that actually has walls. And now Mark is calling from Spinard to talk about some other markets. Mark?
Hi, this is Mark. I'm, again, one of the founders of the Spinard Farmers Market. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to mention the neighborhood concept of markets where you can actually walk to your bike or to your neighborhood. So now, to my knowledge, there's the 15th and Cordova market, there's the Sears Mall market in Midtown, and there's the South market for the folks living in the south end of town, and then there's the Spinard Farmers Market. So each of those are different. Ours in Spinard as a neighborhood market is not trying to replicate the wonderful work that Bill's done downtown, but to make it more neighbor-focused so that you can walk up somewhere, see someone you know, talk to them about issues of the day, remark about their children, you know, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So ours especially is really low cost. Ours is a volunteer-run market. It's a nonprofit. And we allow one-time booth people. So anyone that wants to come and just sell their product just once, we allow that. We're bike-friendly and so forth. So mm-hmm. ours has a very Spinardian feel to it, but the other ones also have their wonderful feel. So I just wanted to mention that. If you're close by one of those markets and want to play with them, buy good products, hang out, talk to people, you certainly have the opportunity in Anchorage now.
That's a great point, and it's kind of a throwback to a neighborhood concept of the past, I guess, which actually never existed in Anchorage, but we've got all these parking lots. We can put markets everywhere. You know, we should turn our parking lots into something good. Well, thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Almost out of time, but there's something we didn't really touch on in much depth, Bill, which is the festival aspect of the market, all the music going on and the buskers and all that stuff. How do you choose the musicians, or how does that come about?
We run ads, and most of it is returning acts, and
mm-hmm.
some of them have played down at the market for years and years, and we do run some ads and some public service things, and I have an entertainment director part-time that books all of our entertainment,
mm-hmm.
and we pretty well let anybody that, you know, wants to have at least one try on stage. I mean, it's
okay.
Definitely a community.
They don't get to
come
back.
It's a community thing, and it's helped a lot of people. I'm absolutely blank on names, Dave. It's a little girl that just about won the American Idol thing. She's played at the market for years.
Oh,
and in fact, it's Big Mitch and his kids come down regularly and are a big part of our stage performers.
And it's all sort of about creating an event where families want to go and spend the day on a weekend day.
There's everything to do. I mean, you've got the stage going mm-hmm. continuously, a variety of entertainment.
So folks who want to get in and perform, they just contact you at the office and
sure.
you'll fit them in somewhere?
Sure. And then if you want to be a busker in the mm-hmm. aisles and you just want to come down and play your guitar or what have you, mm-hmm. just check in with our entertainment director and he'll assign you a spot. And there's days we get dozens of those, literally. We have other groups come in and we have areas for them to play in.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's other activities.
Yeah. And we're about out of time, but it's all starting in about a month here, so get ready. And we're going to get some of these links up on our website. We mentioned a couple of different links, and we already have a link to Bill's business, so you can find out about getting involved in the market.
Right.
It's been a great hour. I want to thank Bill Webb from Anchorage Markets and Made in Alaska program, Terry Atwell, who's a jewelry maker and seller. Next week on Hometown Alaska, Lori Townsend is going to be your host, filling in. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.